This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Right, like city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher.
Well, good morning. This is Scott Wells from the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are at breakfast at Mr. Mama's, which is a place just kind of away from the Orleans, and with a couple of friends from Houston that we are going to be kind of recapping a little bit of what went on yesterday, kind of getting their ideas. I have Dick and his wife, Diane Olson. Hello, guys.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
And then David Hinken. Hey, David.
Good morning.
Remember the red... what's that called? The Red Shoe Society?
Is
that
yeah.
Okay, there you go. So, listen, that for me, let me just say up front, I thought that the it was a great show then yesterday, but last night with that the close-up thing, the Stars of Magic, was just awesome. With you'd ask about who it was that made the special appearance.
Yes, they asked us to close our eyes, and as we closed our eyes, we heard this voice from the past, and it was everybody recognizes Di Vernon, and everybody opened up our eyes, and we turned around and looked down there, and there is somebody, the spitting image of Di Vernon, and he proceeded to do a card trick with somebody at the table, and it was so phenomenal. He had his motions down, he had his hand movements. I mean, he had just even the quips that Di Vernon would come up with,
right,
was amazing. And this gentleman,
Jared Kopp, was his name.
Yes, he had down. It was like several years ago when David Chevette imitated
Blackstone Jr.
Blackstone Jr.
That was uncanny.
It just blew everybody away, yeah. And it's something fun to have.
Yeah,
these things. So.
Yeah, completely different. Yeah, Dick, what do you think?
Well, the highlight of the evening for me was on the stage show.
Yeah.
And Charlie Fried has got to be the best magician, best juggler in the world. I mean, their guys probably do more complicated things, but nobody has a better smooth act. And he just works his heart out.
And his timing for the music and everything, and you know, each little, you know, jump or skip or whatever he does, it's timed to music. I mean, he does three instead of two skips or something, and the way the hat always ends up on the beat and stuff.
It was terrific. And, of course, his having his wife there with him was really...
She was very funny. Yeah,
yeah, she was very funny. So it was... And at the end of his set, I don't know, was he about 10, 15 minutes long?
Yeah.
The guy looked like he was worn out. I'd never seen anybody work as hard as he did.
Yeah.
And then after that, they had a comedian from...
Noel Britton. From Bath, England, yeah.
Yeah, from Bath, England. And, and his British humor, I think, went over very well last night. But there was a point in the show that I was laughing so hard, I thought that I wouldn't be able to catch my breath.
I was going to ask Diane, I thought, what do you think about Noel?
I loved that part of the show. I thought that was the most hilarious act I've ever seen. Yeah. I like the way he handled everyone in the audience and his stage assistants and those two children. It was hilarious.
Well, I thought also, his timing and everything was very even paced, and it was kind of like, you know, the old comedian Jackie Vernon, in which that he was very low key and he wasn't really laughing at himself. It was kind of like a tossed off or a side or something. You know, he'd come out and say, "Well, I feel kind of depressed because half of you are saying." Who's Noel Britton? And then he said, "I don't feel nearly as depressed, except for those who answer on the other side." Said, "I have no idea." You know, I mean, he had such great lines; it was so very funny.
Well, he also had some interesting comments about one of the local performing magicians here that I think pretty much brought down the house.
Yeah, and when you see that something's working, he kept after it too.
He did.
Yeah. Well, you know, topical, of course. Now it was this dentist who had shot a lion in Zimbabwe, and. Apparently that line of humor wasn't going over, so he quickly changed courses, which I thought was interesting. I'm sure he could have stuck on that. As you said, he kind of railed on this other magician, and he kept hitting it, so he kept doing more.
Right. The other interesting thing was in the morning session when, I believe it's Richard Wiseman, mm-hmm. gave a talk on psychology and showed a lot of examples of things. And I thought that was very good, didn't you, Diane?
I think that was an extremely interesting as well as entertaining performance.
And I understand that tonight there's supposed to be something that he is going to be doing that has to do with that very thing, some sort of workshop. We don't know yet, but yeah.
Several sessions will be held, so I don't know if you're allowed to attend more than one. It might be interesting to do that repeat on it.
Right. Anything else about the shows, or David, you want to say? Or?
No, I just, I was telling Dick an interesting fact about Charlie Fry. Charlie is an ex-Ringling Clown. And his wife, Sherry, was an aerialist in Ringling Brothers Barnum Bailey Circus. And they met there, and they got married. And they've, I think it's like 24, 25 years that they've been together. And it's so funny. Charlie's very proud of his wife, and he's always posting on Facebook pictures of her as an aerialist and things like this. And she's a perfect straight woman.
Yeah.
For that whole show. So
yeah.
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Well, going back to what we were talking about to begin with, that again, one of my favorite parts was the Stars of Magic thing last night with Divertin actually being there. And again, yeah, I agree with you that Jared Kopp had just the perfect nuances and the right gestures. The hesitation, the voice simulation was perfect and spot on. But beyond that, with Michael Weber as being the host, that he had this all scripted, and they had music from the 40s that was playing as he was talking. Then he would talk about each of the people who had been in the original book back in 1945 in the Stars of Magic and the tricks that they were teaching, and then showed a video of Slidini on from Dick Cavett show and everything. So it was just a very well done evening. In fact, Mayor Yedid had come in, and he was sitting next to me, and he said, "This is going to be really special." I said, "What's it about?" And he said, "I don't want to tell you." I said, "Well, is it because?" I said, "So and so, I mean, John Thompson, these other guys are going to be performing." He said, "It has nothing to do with performers. It's about the theme of the thing." And so then I got more excited, and he said, "I'd registered just because I'd heard this was going to be going on, you know." And it was I thought very well done.
Yeah, Michael Weber, I thought, did a terrific job. And so smooth, so well scripted. I mean, it just seemed like he was talking off the top of his head, but it was really explaining things very well.
Right. What about the afternoon sessions that we went to? What'd you see?
We only went to one of the afternoon sessions. Trying to think which one.
Cards to Pocket
by Steve Valentine.
By Steve Valentine, and boy, did he really knock that out of the park as well.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately for me, being an older fellow that just had a rather large lunch, some of the key moves, I found my eyes closed. It was a shame, but I understand that he's going to be marketing that now too, so there should be an opportunity to buy
a DVD?
Or something, yeah.
I went to. Did you go the same one as well?
I went to Card to Pocket also.
Yeah, I went to Ian Rowland's Mentalism, and he was talking about some cold reading techniques and things. And then Joel Bauer, and you couldn't go to sleep in Joel Bauer's lecture because he was just very animated, and he was taking people up out of the audience. He was using his trade show persona, and basically how to make $1 million easily a year, And he had, anyhow, it was, if you know Joel Bauer, it was just a very high energy kind of a thing. So, we have some more coming on today. So, anything you're looking forward to seeing today?
Michael Carbonaro in this morning session is going to be good. We just, we love the Carbonaro Effect TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we loved him on the Jay Leno show. So, it's going to be a highlight for us.
There we go. All right, well, I think breakfast is here, and so that kind of gives you a quick recap of what happened there yesterday from the perspective of three to four Texans. So, for the Magic Word Podcast, I was David Hinken, and Dick and Diane Olson, and this is Scotty Al.
How I wish that there were more than 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more.
Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I have with me a good friend, Dave McGee. Hello, David.
Hello, Mr. Scotty.
And it's always good talk with you. You always have some good advice. And you know, for an example, working with charities. I mean, you changed my whole philosophy. And I did some things last year, you know, with Wounded Warriors and some other things.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, well it was... it was for them. It wasn't for something, I mean, like you were saying, that it shouldn't be something that you're trying to gain
no.
for the future, because it's something because you believe in a certain
Absolutely.
Thing, but there are good things that come from it.
Absolutely. It, wasn't that, you were, it was a golf tournament in
yep.
Tyler, wasn't
yep.
it?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you remember. And you know how I knew about that, Scotty? I saw it on social media when I was on social media.
So what do you think about social media? What
you know, I'm going to be really honest with you. I'm not a guy that ever admits that I don't like to admit that I'm wrong. I really do not like to admit that I'm wrong.
Most of us don't.
No, I don't. But you know what? There comes a time, and there, my wife, three people, my wife, that we should all listen to, our wives, my business manager and partner, Michelle,
yeah.
With the show deal we have with the casino,
yeah.
and Johnny Thompson, my consultant. All three of them were continually telling me, you don't have the personality to be on social media because you're too outspoken,
mm-hmm.
okay?
You're intense.
I'm very intense.
Yeah.
I do everything with a lot of passion.
And you're focused.
I try to be. I really am. But you know what? I have ADD, and I jump all over the place. And when I see something, I tend to react really quickly,
yeah.
which brings me to the point of I had to just completely get off and deactivate from social media.
Okay.
Johnny tells me, and I don't think he'd feel bad at all one bit. And I know there are people that say, well, it can be good. And I do believe it has its good features.
Yeah.
But I also believe, as we all know, that there's always these, there's yin and there's a yang. Always. And Johnny seems to believe that it's just an awful thing for people working that are outspoken and that do speak their mind. Because, for instance, I'm branded to the casino now.
Correct.
And, you know, she basically, my business partner, she basically just told me, she said, look, all this work that we've been doing, you're going to jeopardize it because somebody might call in. So I think that one thing guys have to, whether they're working for corporate America, whether they're, what their beliefs are, you've got to learn to do two things. Keep it to yourself and shut your mouth.
Yeah.
I know it sounds awfully crude and rough, but I had to learn that.
Yeah, you got to separate the two.
You have to. And you can't be letting people, because all it takes, Scott, is one person calling that casino or calling and going, I don't like what he said on his thing. I follow him, and I don't like what he said. And the casino will say, well, it could reflect on us. Look at this. Look what it does. And, you know, I have a sense of humor that I don't ever want to hurt anybody's feelings. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And I'm just out there. And like you said, you hit the nail on the head. I'm intense. And I do it with everything. And I don't ever want to hurt anybody. If I knew I hurt anybody's feelings, it would crush me. All right? But I do get passionate about stuff, to what I believe in. But you have to separate that from what you're doing, because I believe that it's hurting a lot of people in our industry.
I agree. And if you do not have the ability to make that separation
sure.
and to stop before you hit
yeah.
send,
yeah.
then you probably shouldn't be on Facebook. And
well, you had a great point. Things. I think it was you that said to me, you write something sometimes,
Correct.
And then you look at it. It's
yep.
just like that old adage that my buddy Harrison used to say, you write a letter,
yep. hold it,
and you hold it overnight, but see, it's so easy now to push that little button,
mm-hmm.
and we don't think that intensity kicks in, and you go, forget it, I'm going to send it.
After I've written it, well, you're right, just you're about to finish what I told you there yesterday, that whenever that I'll write back because I don't agree with someone's whatever it is, and I feel so passionate because they have been passionate, and
right.
I have the other another viewpoint, or even if I agree with them, you know,
right.
but the point is, I write it, and I look at it, and I think, I don't want people to know because that it may affect one client, which could
Absolutely.
Have a ripple effect, and it's the negative part of that. Now,
Absolutely.
Let me also say that with Facebook, that you can have a fan page in which nobody
yes.
can post on there, so it would just be all about you.
You. That's
yeah.
true.
And so
that
you,
is a good point, too.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. And again, I'm not as technical as a lot of these young guys are nowadays and gals, because
mm-hmm.
they are amazing what they can do. And again, and again, a lot of them listen to this and go, well, I don't ever have any problem. And if you don't, great. That's wonderful. Just don't let it become, because it can. I'll give you a great example. I won't say any names, but there was a guy in that sells product and stuff in Magic,
yeah.
and was getting on and just going really. And I saw a lot of guys just hammering. And then a couple of guys said to me, "Well, I'm not going to ever get anything from him. I'm not going to purchase. I'm going to cancel my subscription. And I was thinking, wow. And stupid me, I was too blind to even see. Well, hey, that could be you.
Sure.
With people doing it. So you know what? I learned a real lesson, and I learned to listen, which we've talked about this before. I learned to listen to my partner, my wife, my mentor, and I just got off. Okay. I just got off.
Well, you went off all turkey.
I went off.
All you have is email, basically.
I have email.
Yeah.
I'm not on Twitter. I never did Twitter. Yeah, I never did
Instagram.
Those other ones. Instagram. I never did those.
Okay.
My thing was Facebook. And I'm going to tell you the other thing. One more thing. It can suck the life out of you.
Well, that's true.
I'd get up in the morning, Scott, and the ADD kick. I'd look at my Facebook to see what people had said from the night before, and I have to respond. I would sometimes sit there from 8 in the morning till 10:30 in the morning. My wife would come up, "What are you doing? I'm wasting time."
Yeah, you're not making money.
No, I'm not making money, and I'm wasting time.
True enough.
And again, guys, if you're listening to this, I know you're not all like this. So if you're not, use it to your advantage, because I believe that it can be a wonderful tool.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of us, because I see it on there.
Yeah.
And I was going to start losing friendships. You know, here's the thing. When I used to come to Vegas for 25 years of doing trade shows, we were just talking about Joel and Seth and a bunch of us and Harrison. And you'd know, when you'd come out here, we used to see our friends.
Sure.
We'd have dinner.
Sure.
You didn't talk that often to them, but you saw.
Right.
We never talked religion. We never talked politics. We never talked anything.
Yeah, family.
Now,
things, yeah.
Family. How you do?
Yeah.
Now, we talk work. Now, everybody throws everything up there, and you know.
Right.
I didn't know what half their beliefs were. And what that does is it starts going, all of a sudden, wait, I liked this guy. And now you're going at each other.
Point. Yeah.
It's not worth it.
Well, and so that's another thing, I think, then, Dave, that you shouldn't necessarily be starting a thread on something that people have a passion about. And that being religion and politics being two key things that there are can be polarizing, certainly.
Absolutely.
And so I just think it's, think before you post. It would be my advice.
Absolutely.
And also, but when you get on to Facebook or any of the media, it's like with your rest of your life, you should have a business plan. What is your plan? And and I think that actually the social media should be part of part of your business plan.
Sure.
I know a lot of guys, like who are going through and lecturing, and they will send out their tweets. They say like Jay Sankey or Eric Jones, Aaron Fisher, a bunch of these guys, and all of a sudden, they'll have 50 guys will show up for a lecture that we've never seen at a club meeting before.
Absolutely.
Because these guys are followers, and so, but they don't know what the rest of the club members are doing, because these are old fuddy-duddies who are not in the digital age.
I agree.
So I'm just saying that it can be used properly, certainly.
Absolutely.
I think you have to put your feelings aside and, again, know what your plan is. And if your plan is that you want to use social media as a business tool, keep it as a business. If you want to have it as a personal thing, that's another thing you need to think about, because if you're going to be looking for a job, that a lot of times that employers will look at your resume. They'll have you come in and talk, and as soon as you leave, one of the first things they'll do is a Google search on you and find out, okay, you got a Facebook page, let me see. Oh, this lady goes out and parties all the time. This guy goes drinking
point.
Buddies and everything,
great
won't get the job.
No.
So you don't want to post a lot of stuff necessarily out there that could really jeopardize your future. So this doesn't have has an application beyond magic, actually.
Well, and the one thing Michelle, and my business partner Michelle, made a point of the other day was, she said, why don't we do this? Why don't we get you a page, fan page, just like you said, and let us monitor it.
Yeah.
And you don't mess with it. Because really all they want to know is where you're appearing.
That's exactly
when the show's coming
right.
up, what you're going to be doing, and pat you on the back. Hey, you're a great guy, this and that. You just want to be vanilla.
I love John Stetson's posts. They're very generic. He posts a lot of things that are that are black and white photos of some movies, posters, or pictures, just stills, And he's at this airport. I'm in Atlanta today, I'm a meeting with. I just saw Doc Hilford or whatever, and so.
Right.
But they're always upbeat things, and I'm working, I'm traveling, and. Or something that is, again.
Or he'll put a quote. I've seen some of his stuff.
But
a positive quote. He's good. And you know what I'll say? I've never seen anything on, like, for instance, I've never seen John get anything with anybody.
Right.
Which, good for him. I mean, that's good. And I wish I was like that. I'm just dadgummit, I'm not.
Well, there again, you got to know what your personality is going to be.
Sure.
Like. And if you think that you want to set up a personal page and a fan page that
people can still find you.
Sure.
And so, absolutely. In other words, you can have two characters, and if you over here, and they're going to say, wait a minute, that you'd need to close down that one page if it's going to jeopardize your other business page.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
No, you're 100% right. So, again, I think, there's good, there's bad, there are good points, there's bad points, and if we just take these and learn these lessons, and I learned a great lesson, and it's...
And that lesson was?
To keep my mouth shut and keep my opinions to myself and go out and work and entertain people and do what I'm supposed to do, and that's make them laugh and make them have a great time.
And that's what you're advising everyone
and
else to
do? That's what I'm telling everybody to do.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
Okay, very good.
Keep your head down and keep it up.
Very good. Thanks a lot. That was Dave McGee for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty.
Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Las Vegas with your neon.
Scott Wells from the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm over here at Losander's booth and run into Derek Losander. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fantastic, and here also hanging out is someone I haven't seen in a while, good friend Michael Marr. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Scott.
You're looking good.
You.
And you as
Thank
well.
Thank you, my friend.
And by the way, I was going to wish you a happy birthday. I wasn't around in July when
right.
you had
I was
in Florida, in your neck of the woods, basically.
A belated happy birthday. Thank you.
And so you got to be... older than 50 now.
59.
So, 59. I hate to say pushing 60.
Delicately entered into.
And so what have you been up to? What have you been working on? It's been
Two things. You know, Discover Magic is this curriculum for kids, 8 to 12 years old, that I'm doing with Brian South and Michael Rossander. Interestingly enough, Rossander on the East Coast, and Rossander I'm doing something with out here in Vegas. So I'm always confused. Discover Magic is this, life skills course camouflaged as a magic class.
Is it available online then?
No, it has to be conducted live.
Okay.
Because the best stuff you can learn, you learn from performing. So the kids really have to perform a lot.
Do they come into a class, into a location, like they're in Florida then?
Yes,
So it's like a McBride Master class, they come to Vegas, the type of thing?
It's like a franchise. So there's 52 guys that have already signed up.
That was my question. And there are the teachers from other places.
Cool. Yeah.
And the 52 states.
Starts around in September. we have some in England and one in Singapore and Hong Kong. You see, there's like nice.
Good
to see you as well.
Fantastic. Good to see you again.
Hey, how are you?
Nice to see you.
And so, still visiting a lot of friends stopping by. That's right. You're on here. Okay. Juliana Chen is stopping by.
How beautiful, yes.
Yes. And so, you've got a lot of people who are going to be teaching the class. And so, this, how long of a course is it?
90-minute classes.
Okay.
But we also tell you how to expand it to 10 classes or compress it into 5, depending on if you're like a summer camp or something like that. So it's really flexible, but intended to be 8 90-minute classes.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's like the main event, but I'm excited to be here with Losander because we're debuting this new floating glass.
This glass, okay, that's what we're just talking about and showing, which is interesting. So, Dirk, tell me something about the glass.
Something about the glass?
Yeah, the floating glass.
Well, it was I think it was 3 years ago. I was in Blackpool. Michael came to me and showed me a little prototype with this glass idea he had and asked me if he would like to collaborate on it and make it better, And then I came up fairly quick, I would say a couple months after that, with the first prototype, which was working just fine, but a little bit impractical, let's just say that way. It was,
right. There's been a few versions of it. And by the time you got to you, that was like a third version of it.
Exactly.
So there's been a half dozen, but this version that Dirk's come up with is really stellar.
It's ready to go to market now.
It's easy on, easy off, any glass, whether it's got liquid in it or not. It has all this beautiful articulation.
It's great for restaurant workers, what I can see right here. It's perfect.
You use
it's got a
restaurant
right
napkin.
Napkin.
So any napkin,
glass.
Any glass. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, the flat top of the glass makes it clear that the glass is staying flat no matter how you move the hands. You know, it's articulating.
Yeah.
Which really, I think, adds to the deceptive look of independent
like
movement.
The table, you know.
Exactly, the flat top of the
shape,
table.
You know, right.
You know that table is staying still while he's moving around. It's really cool.
I'm gonna have to maybe take a video of you doing it and then post that on the
sure,
blog so people
sure.
can see that then too. Sounds pretty
so
cool.
Basically, think of the table when you know how the table floats, that's how the glass floats.
Yeah.
That good.
Yeah.
And can be done surrounded from all angles. Like he already said, any glass can be liquid in it or not.
Right.
And any class.
Yeah. Speaking of dealers, by the way, let me kind of keep on that subject for a minute, because the first opening night over here, when the dealers fair opened, it was six deep at every table. You know, have you been doing well here?
I've done very well.
Okay,
yes.
I would think all the dealers couldn't complain.
The only complaint was on the first night, because it was so unbelievably busy. You performed for one people and lost 20. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there were a lot of people
who
didn't see anything.
Twice as much by having extra helpers.
So for instance, glass. Yeah. I showed it to one or two people and they saw it, but then really the next day it was more intensive when people came and I showed it, and then the word spread around. I mean, I think it's the talk of the convention already. So
you know, and what's great about it also in a close-up, really close-up situation.
Yeah.
It's a levitation that's unaffected by weight. You know, it's one thing to float the bill or some very light object.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I understand the limitations.
Sure.
And laymen understand the limitations as well.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the only thing that you can float like that?
Yeah.
You know, or can you float this? You know, and it's something a little heavier.
Well,
you know, what's your breaking point?
Even like, I mean, so many magicians have the floating table and you don't have it all the time with you, but you can have this all the time with you.
Yeah.
If somebody knows, you said, oh, I remember the table. Oh, let me show you this is a glass. So you do the same thing with the glass, you know?
That is so great.
Oh, very good.
What have you enjoyed about the convention? You've only been probably at the dealer's table the whole time.
Exactly.
And you're
so
demoing stuff.
Tell you something about
Michael.
Table.
You know, this stand always has great surprises. And I think that it's clear from the way the information is disseminated that it's intended to be a different experience than the traditional program and traditional.
That you know what's going to be coming up, and you make a plan. Well, I want to see this, but not that. This way, everybody goes to see everything because you don't know what it's going to be about until you get into the room.
That's a tricky thing there. That you better go because you don't know. And it's like,
you might
regret every seat is full here. How did that happen? Because they don't know.
That's right. And you've been involved with this in the past, where you've given a lecture. And
I've participated in one of the previous ones. You know, I think really. You know, if I did like articles in the magazine, that might make a difference. Yeah, because it's intended to be like the magazine.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm going around doing the podcast. You know, I work for
fans.
So
this is in kind of sort of count as being in the.
Yeah, because I do I'm the convention editor and convention podcaster, and so I do podcasts.
Well, I've contributed to at least one in a row.
Yes, yes, you have. This is a contribution.
Yes,
very true, very true. So let me ask you guys, and Dirk, I've asked you this before about what your magic word is. And I think I have you when we were in Florida some years ago at Coach's deal. Anyhow, since it's called the Magic Word Podcast, what's important in your life that makes word or phrase or your philosophy?
Wow.
Dirk, you remember?
Yes, okay. I remember. I don't remember what I said.
Well, it could be something different, you know, that your life changes, you move on, and so what may have been important last year or last week maybe changed because something influenced your life and changed.
Well, magic changed certainly my life, but what I learned very, very soon by becoming a magician that when you are a magician or when you want to be a magician, you have to be pretty much a magician 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just pretend to be a magician and do your thing. So you adapt eventually your life and you become what you are or want to be, and that changed completely everything for me. And, you know, and
your life was changed because of magic. So
totally. And changed also so many people I encountered throughout the years, you know.
Yeah.
Because by them maybe seeing that the impossible is possible, they apply it to their life and change their entire life because of it. So magic is really fascinating. It's actually, when you see it from that level, you're really doing real magic for the people.
Right. Michael?
Yeah, you know, a tribute to Rick Johnson, Excelsior, that's onward and upward, you know, is my current thing, because, some really exciting stuff. you know, good. In the works,
yep.
and on the horizon. So, yeah, it's very exciting.
Fantastic. Well, good. Thank you guys very much for the Magic Group Podcast. That was
Thank
Michael Hart, Derek Losander. This is Scotty out.
Fever, Las Vegas turning day into nighttime, turning night into daytime. If you see it once, you'll never be the same again.
All right, still at Scott Wells, the Magic Word Podcast.com. Still in the dealer's room now with Alakazam Magic, all the way from the UK. Peter Nard, how are you?
I'm very well, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and you're looking good. Did you have a pretty good convention so far here?
It's been brilliant. It's always a great convention.
But you've been coming here quite often. I mean,
yeah, we've done well,
third one, or
this is our second Magic Live, but we have done a few conventions in the US,
yep.
And we plan to do a few more as well,
okay.
Just to get the name out there.
I was going to say that I'm surprised. I mean, I get your emails all the time of all the stuff that you're coming up with, and that Mark Spellman and you and a bunch of other guys are always coming up with some really good ideas and some stuff all the time. How many things do you work on at a time?
It's a great price as well.
Before you actually bring it to Mark, I mean, you've got to fiddle around with things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we get sent in new products almost on a daily basis, people with ideas, but then we have to filter them out. They've got to really fit into the Alakazam branding. People know us a lot for mentalism, but we also do a lot of close-up magic. So usually we're working on about four projects at a time, but we try and space them out so they don't all hit the same time, you know, and we try and look for different things. So maybe one mentalism, one card, you know, one coin trick, or just something that makes it slightly different so they're not competing with some with each other and we're not pushing them all out at the same time. But me and Spellman have got three or four projects we're working on. We haven't done anything together for about 4 years, I think.
Has it been that long?
Yeah,
it's
okay. Yeah, because he's been really busy. He's got married, and you know, he's really busy with stuff. Obviously, I've been busy with Alakazam, but we've got our heads together. There's loads of projects that we worked on 4 or 5 years ago that we never brought to light, so we're going to get back onto all those and start bringing them out. So you'll see more Nardi Spellman stuff or Spellman Nardi stuff coming out soon.
Do you have your own television studio area where you film all your DVDs and everything?
Well, we actually hire. If you watch our DVDs, they're usually in this big manor house.
Oh, okay.
For some reason,
so that's not your place.
No, a lot of people thought it was my place. Yeah. It's not. I wish it was.
You're doing so well.
Yeah. It's a place called Eastwell Manor, which is near my house. Beautiful, beautiful place. And it's sort of become a bit of a trademark now. You know, you see the beautiful fireplace and everything else. So that's usually where we film.
It makes it seem very nice and comfy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, this is the kind of place you'd be normally performing this kind of
trailer. Yeah. It's lovely. It's a lovely place. Spellman likes things a bit darker. He would like to get me in some sort of garage somewhere because he's a bit weird. But, yeah, so I don't know where the Spellman and my stuff will be filmed. But, yeah, with us, we use this Eastwell Manor. Absolutely beautiful, and I love filming there, you know. It's really, really great. But we've got some really exciting stuff coming out in the future. One of the things I'm really hyped about is a set of DVDs by a card magician called Paul Gordon. I've known Paul for 25 years. For 20 of those years, I've been bugging him to do a DVD set with us.
He's finally going
to
do something.
And we've done it. It's done, it's been edited, and it's coming out around Christmas.
Wow.
So it's super.
And it's all good commercial stuff, not just pipe dream stuff.
No. Everything he does can be done by a beginner to intermediate. It's all from a shuffled deck, and it's all practical. Like, totally practical.
Can't beat that.
And he's one of those guys that you hand him a deck if you're in a bar, and he can just go on for hours, like literally hours. Just.
And people, most guys can, but he can be entertaining, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Big difference.
He's great. Like I said, I met him 25 years ago. I've been bugging him for 20 years. I'm really glad it's coming out now. So that's something to look out for.
That's cool.
I'm really hyped about it.
Well, what is new? What's going on in the UK as far as magic? I mean, is it still pretty hot? I mean, is Dynamo still doing TV shows? Or
No. Dynamo's finished his TV show, but he's got a live show coming up, which I think starts next year.
Yeah.
On Britain's Got Talent, we just had a magician come second place.
Oh, that's good.
A fantastic magician called Jamie Raven. And Jamie has got his own tour starting in January. But the Illusionists, do you know the Illusionists?
Yeah, sure do. Yeah, we just had them here in the US.
Yeah, they're coming to England. Jamie's in that along with Kevin James.
Jeff Hobson and
it's not Jeff Hobson. It's
David Williamson.
David Williamson.
Yeah. I know he was still in the informant. Yeah. He used it when he came through.
And Colin McLeod's in it.
Colin, very well.
So that's over in the UK at the moment. And there's another show running at the same time called Impossible, which is another group of magicians. You know, once again, Illusionist.
I think I did hear about that that show too. Okay.
Yeah. And you've got Darren, of course.
I was going to say, is Darren still working like East End, or what's he around the country, or
what Darren does is he plays the tour around the country, and then he usually finishes at the West End for a run of a few weeks. So he's touring at the moment, I think. Then he takes a break, and then he starts again. But he seems to be pretty constant. By the time when we go and watch him, we tend to watch him later on during the tour.
Yeah,
they're already announcing the next tour.
Does he have new stuff? I mean, each tour he's got new things he does all the time.
Yeah, it's great. I mean,
he's got a good crew of people behind him, kind of helping with these ideas too.
Yeah, Nyman's back on it now as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so it's great. Always a great show. So Magic at the moment is in the UK.
It's hot again.
Yeah,
you know, I heard Paul was on a tour also.
Yeah,
Paul Daniels.
So it's just getting bigger. It goes in a cycle. I don't know what it's like in America, because Magic's always seemed to be really popular in America, but over in the UK, it was quite a dirty word for a while.
Well, it in the US, it seems to be more of what I'd call a low art, as opposed to being elevated in something that people would appreciate. In England, people know what the Magic Circle is.
Yeah.
You know, when I would say over there, I'm an MIMC, Gold Star, it's like, oh, that means something. Of course, here, that, it doesn't mean anything necessarily. When I went to FISM, for an example, that the quality of the international competitors was higher than what I felt that the Americans were. By evidence of, not just my opinion, but obviously the judges, because they did not score high enough this year. In the past, obviously, they've won, with Lance Burton and John East Palmer and others who have won. I'm not saying that they're all, not the same quality. Anyhow, it does kind of come and go right now. It's very popular in the U.S. with television shows like Masters of Illusion and the America's Got Talent, Matt Frankel having won last year. He's just going to be opening this week here.
Yeah.
I think Thursday night he's going to be having kind of a soft opening, I guess, here in Vegas with his new show.
Yeah, and has he got a TV show as well coming out or something?
Matt Frankel?
Yeah.
Not that I've heard of, but that's possible. Maybe so. I don't know.
Oh, that would be good if he has.
Yeah. Now, where do they go around? I mean, when I think, of course, England is, Texas is about as big as England, so whenever you're touring around, which cities do people go? I mean, that they're Manchester and...
You've got Edinburgh, Liverpool, Manchester, London, obviously, is the main one.
Go to Wales or to Cardiff or that far?
Okay. Literally everywhere. They will tour. When the tour's going, it's everywhere.
But there are still a lot of theatres over there that we don't have here.
Yeah, we've got
those kind of venues.
Yeah, we've got those. Some of them, some of them are small, sort of quite intimate theatres, but we have got the live performances now are starting to get bigger and bigger, so more theatres are sort of coming up, or places where you could have a theatre show.
Another thing that's big over there, and correct me if I'm wrong, and that has to do with magicians performing at weddings. I do a few weddings over here, but it's very difficult to do. But as I understand over there, that they book the castles or cathedrals or wherever they're working like a year in advance or longer, because there are so few venues, and they're like a full day kind of a thing. So a magician might work in the morning, then come back and work in the afternoon.
I mean,
wow.
Magic at weddings has become more and more popular now, and it's become a sort of staple of a wedding. So now they get the cake, they get the magician. It's like everyone wants a magician at their wedding.
I mean, here's the music and the wedding singer, and so they always have a band.
Yeah.
They never think about a magician, but
magician
comes before
the
band. Oh, they have a disco too. Yeah.
So the magician, I mean, we usually have at a wedding, you have a sit-down meal, the same as you do in America. So the magician will usually work the tables.
Yeah.
And that's usually it. The magician will go in, they'll work the tables, or they'll work when the photographs, because the photographs take ages in the UK, I presume they do over here.
It takes about 45 minutes.
So the magician will keep people entertained while photographs are going on. And they tend not to work in the evening. By that time, they're gone. By the time the music's on, the magician's out. So it's usually a 2-3 hour gig.
Well, that makes sense, certainly.
Yeah.
Now, do they get married in the morning, or is there a certain time of the day in which they get married?
Yeah, usually people get
get married at, get round at around about 2 o'clock, but by the time the magician starts it should be about 3 or 4, or maybe slightly later if they're having a break and then going for the meal. But it's very big business, and there's the big thing in England at the moment is not only, it used to be that people only got married on a Saturday. In England it was only a Saturday and that was a marriage day.
That's interesting.
Yeah, now it's every day in the week, because obviously they can get the venue cheaper.
Okay, sure.
Saturdays, so everyone expanded, wants them.
More opportunities.
Yeah, so, you know, a great magician called Chris Harding that still works for me. He does some of our PR stuff, but he's been with me since he was 14, but now he's a full-time pro out there. He's most probably doing 5 weddings a week.
You know? Wow.
Maybe even more, actually, because I think some Saturdays and Sundays...
Is that word of mouth or promotion to his website? Or how
a lot of his is word of mouth. He is
really
amazing.
Phenomenal, huh?
But not only is he a good magician, and what a lot of magicians forget is to do it as a business, you've got to be a good businessman, not just a good magician.
Well, then what does he do to be a good businessman to get those additional shows?
Just make sure that he makes sure his clients know where he's about. We have things that are called wedding fairs. I don't know if you have them over here.
So I've been to some.
Yep. So over in England, they are really popular.
No.
You'll go to one, you'll have 3 or 4 magicians there trying to get bookings.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm the only one whenever I attend these things.
Yeah, he's doing those all the time. Anywhere that he can get found, he will be. You know, he'll make sure he promotes himself while he's out and about. Not a heavy sell, but he makes sure people remember him, you know. And it's all these things. You've got to be prepared to show magic wherever you are. You've got people hire a magician. A lot of people don't know what a magician actually does. They still expect it to be pulling a rabbit out of a hat. Whereas if you're in a restaurant and you do some magic to the waiter, they now know what it is. And I guarantee you they'll be impressed and they'll try and get you to work there. That's the type of thing, you know, if you're prepared to do something, because a lot of people, you've got to realise, don't understand what close-up magic is.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen a bit of magic on TV, but they don't realise you can have magic in a restaurant, at a wedding, because they see magic on TV, and usually it's big stage events.
Like Paul Daniels or something, big things,
So, once people witness close-up magic, or if they see you at a wedding, they now want you at their wedding. It now becomes the norm, so it's like a big snowball effect.
That makes sense.
All the time, you know.
Because they really don't see a lot of magicians at restaurants, because that's not big in the UK as it is over here, is it?
No, but it's getting bigger. It is getting bigger, yeah. But it's still not, you know, it's not one of those things where people will go, let's go out and we'll find a restaurant with a magician. It just so happens that there will be a magician there while they're sitting there eating. You know, it's not something...
Do they use lobby cards to promote themselves? Lobby cards, you know, that they would have their picture in the front, they say, appearing tonight...
Well, I used to have a residency in a local restaurant near me. Residencies are great. You don't get paid a huge amount, but it gives you, usually you do it on a day where you're never going to be busy, so you're just sitting at home anyway. But it gives you a great chance to break in new material, and also it's putting you in front of people that could quite possibly book you. So if you can get a residency, try and get one. When I did the residency, I used to do it once every 2 weeks, and the restaurant would have a special deal on. So they would say, come in, you see the magician, and you get a set meal price of this. And by the time I would finish my evening, they would already be booked out for the next 2 evenings. So it's great for them.
Sure.
And it was great for me, because I was sitting at home doing nothing.
Now, when you say a residency, do you also sign a contract with them, or is that just kind of a handshake and you say, I'm going here?
Yeah. And, you know, it was known that they would ask me if I could do it. So if a gig come in that was going to pay me 5 times as much, I would say, look, I can't do it, we'll do it the following week.
Do you not get somebody to replace you?
Yeah, I could have done it, and I did do that a few times. But if they wanted me specifically, they would just move it, because a lot of these things we would advertise in advance. But usually for me, if a gig come in, if I was already booked with them and we had advertised it, I would not take the other gig. But usually they would ring me up and say, can you do 2 weeks time, or can you do 4 weeks time?
Right.
So we could book it, and if I didn't have anything on, or if I had a gig, they would just move it a week later. So it was all quite flexible.
And the economy, how's that doing over in the UK? I mean, I know for a long time it's kind of down, and that's why I thought perhaps that magicians may not be working as much as they were, because I think that's the first entertainment's the first thing it's cut in a company's budget if they're going to be having something. Is it starting to come back up a little bit, or what's
I think it is. We went through the corporate bookings went down quite a bit. So there was a lot of corporate entertainers that were
were struggling to get the work that they were getting. But the standard jobs, like the weddings, the restaurants, parties, that didn't really seem to get affected. But the corporate stuff did take a dip, but it's starting to build back up now. Because of the recession, there was a lot of people being made unemployed. Corporate companies couldn't be seen to be spending money on entertainment.
Right. You know? And going back to restaurants, just finishing up over here, that they don't tip over there either, do they?
Not really. Tipping, I mean, if you go to a restaurant, you usually do tip, but it's not like America where it's expected. You do.
They don't have a place on there that says gratuity?
Do you know what? They're starting to now.
Interesting. Okay.
If you go in there with a big party, they start putting on, it's an optional service charge. So they say, you know, service charge is so much. But most places you go, it's down to you whether you tip. Now, I've always tipped in a restaurant, and people usually do. But a magician going around, you don't usually get tipped.
You shouldn't be expecting something if you're
working.
So you shouldn't be working for tips because you're not going to get them.
No, you work for your fee, and then you're happy with your fee. If you get a tip, it's great. I've never accepted a tip. I've been offered tips. I've never accepted them because I've been paid to do it.
Sure.
And I don't want the people at the table to feel that if I go there, they're going to have to tip me. I don't want them feeling awkward. You know, I've been paid to be there. I'm happy to do it.
Makes perfect sense. Let me just wrap up over here because the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast.
Yes.
So I want to find out then, Peter, what is your magic word? I don't mean necessarily alakazam. It may or may not be, but my question would be, what is your philosophy of life? What is it that is important? What drives you each day to get up? I mean, what's important to you? It could be a phrase, a word.
Do you know what? To me, it's happiness. That's it. I mean, it really is. If you do what you want to do, if you do what makes you happy, what more could you want out of life? You know, I've got a great family. I've got my own business, something that, you know, I couldn't have dreamt of 30 years ago. We've been going for 25 years. I've been lucky enough to be able to do what I love every day. And that to me is, you know, the best thing.
That's great.
The best thing.
Very good.
And I hope everyone else can experience it as well, you know, because that's what it is.
That's your wish for them.
Yeah,
that's good.
Cool.
So that's good. For the Magic Word Podcast, that's Peter Nardi with alakazam.com, I guess.
Yeah, .co.uk.
.co.uk. This is Scotty L.
I'm gonna keep on the run. I'm gonna have me some fun. It cost me my very last dime. If I wind up broke, well, I'll always remember that I had a swing in time.
I'm Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and I have one of the producers actually over here at Magic Live, Paul Draper. Hey, Paul.
So I'm the technical director of the sessions.
That's
so
what
all,
you're
the,
doing.
All the daily sessions, I call the shows and put those together.
And how many sessions have there been so far?
So far, well, there have been four shows, but only two different shows, right? So we have two each day that are identical. And they've been fabulous. In the big room, 800 people per show, so 1,500 people, 1,600 people coming in, right, to see it. It's only 1,600 if there's people sneaking in, though, I think.
Yeah. Well, it was sold out. I think there wouldn't be any room for them to even sit once they did sneak in, you know. And so what have been some of the challenges?
Well, the hardest challenge of this is we're putting on two shows in the day on the stage every day and two shows at night on the stage every night. And that means that there's 10 to 15 acts per day that are coming in, setting up all their illusions, setting up their PowerPoint, setting up their shows in a two-hour rehearsal space, and then, boom, they have to perform. So the entire crew, within 2 hours, has to get two shows ready to go. And as soon as the shows are done, they get wiped away, and the next day, new shows again. And so I've been here till midnight each day and back on stage at 7 a.m.
Yeah. Has the second show of each one of these, I assume, been a little bit tighter or better?
It's not always that way, because if your crew is too excited about the first show, if the first show goes too perfectly, sometimes people become lazy on the second show, so I have to crack the whip and be tighter about being aware and being alert and cutting down chatter on the show. But sometimes there are things they learn in the first show about this particular space that makes the second show better. So in truth, you never know. Both shows have been better in different ways. We had Copperfield here the first day, and his two talks were equally good, but different.
Were they? That's interesting.
Equally good.
Sure.
But
I was the first one, and when I was talking to someone in the second one, there was something that apparently he did or said, which was different, a little bit different than the first one. But they said pretty much the same thing. The bottom line was he was great, he was personable and vulnerable, and just we really enjoyed it. It was one of the highlights, you know, of the thing.
It's wonderful. I mean, the core message is always the same.
Well, see, several years ago when I was president of the TAOM, that we had a show each evening, and what I decided is, okay, we'll have a theater show and then one in the hotel, and then the next night we'll switch them, so they'll be the people who were in one will go to the other one, so that way they get a more of an intimate experience, at least that way. And I thought the second show would be tighter, but that wasn't necessarily the case.
Right.
So I can kind of understand what you're saying.
And we had Michael Carbonaro today. We had Jorge Blas. We had your wonderful acts. We had Noel Britton last night, the fabulous Greg Gleason. I mean, Charlie Fry. A lot of today on stage had James DeMare. You know, so many standing ovation acts.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many standing ovation acts at this convention.
That's true.
It's really one of the greatest conventions in the world.
Yeah. No question about that. And obviously that is proof is in the pudding, and that is the fact that it sells out. This is the seventh one, and each one, it's just, I mean, there are only so many seats, and that's how they limited it.
How I know how good it is no one has talked to me yet about the presidential debates. Nobody.
About the what?
Presidential debates.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I know the convention is amazing.
Completely forgot about
no
that.
One's thinking about politics.
Well, that's absolutely true.
But I have spent too much money, so there we are.
I've been, unfortunately, buying a couple things. I thought I wasn't, but I was coerced. There were some things. It's like, okay, I got to have this. So
I do worry about some of the RFID chip stuff, though, some of the electronic stuff.
Sure.
Because really, I think that if you're going to bring some special prop that has that in it, you'd be better off just putting a pencil dot on the back of it.
Yeah, do the simple one. I guess that's true, because there's so many other magicians who are using the same thing and on the same frequency or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that would be an issue. You know, when you and I go to the Mindvention here in Vegas that they have in the dealer's room,
Thousands
of dollars of stuff. Everybody's selling electronic discs and the thumpers or whatever kind of a thing, you know. So, yeah, and there have been a few people here, the dealers who have been selling some stuff then, too. Do you have any idea about how many dealers there are here in the dealer room?
I don't. I'm not involved in that at all.
I've been looking for Stan, and we've been apparently going in the opposite circles, and so we haven't had a chance to chat yet. So.
But there's a sign right up there at the front. It's shaped like a big M, like Magic Magazine.
Yes.
The room is shaped like an M in the way the moving patterns are. And there's a sign in the front that shows all the dealers and who's here and how many there are.
I'll have to take a picture of that.
Exactly.
Okay.
So take that shot and let people know. But one of the key fundamental things about this dealer space is that there's only one person selling posters, one person selling electronica, selling they're one major bookseller. And so this is an experience of great variety rather than an experience of every booth competing with the same product.
Yeah, like three cups and balls.
Right.
Like you only got one rings. So that's why Alki Van Dalken's not here.
That's
I wondered, okay, because I saw rings and things, and someone was asking if Alki was here. And, okay, that
they're
makes sense.
Ones.
I understand. So how does he go about, or do you have any idea about how that he selects which one would be this year and not next year?
Right. The first selection is who is advertised in the magazine.
Makes perfect sense.
Magic Live is really about bringing the magazine to life.
Okay.
And so
hence the name.
Right, Magic Live. Yeah. Right. So we're looking at bringing in people that have been in the magazine in the last 2 years, that have been featured, that have had articles, that have advertised, that are a part of the experience so that you can come here and see them live on stage.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds fantastic. Well, what should we look forward to in the next couple of days without spilling any beans?
Of course, the things that you should look forward to are... I apologize. I was just muted and edited out. I don't know how that happened.
I couldn't let that go. I had to cut that out.
But you'll love it.
I know I will. I've loved everything so far. Paul, thank you very much. You've done such a great job that you've done. So with the Magic Word Podcast, that's Paul Draper. This is Scotty out.
How I wish that there were more than 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more, I wouldn't sleep a minute away.
All right. Scott Wells with the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have Chuck Jones with me over here. Hello, Chuck.
Hello there, Scott. How are you?
I see you tonight. I'm doing fantastic. Yep.
And I have my wife, Jan.
Jan. Hi,
she was the Miss Made Girl.
I was going to say that you were the original Miss Made Girl over there. What was that like whenever he was sticking the box? I mean, I assume that you had drawn this out before you actually put her in the box. I mean, you knew kind of...
We drew it out and made a cardboard box first, you know, to see if it would work.
Did you actually make... Like, when we Paul Verlaine made his ladder suspension that he had a small doll, like a Barbie doll, that he kind of made sure the thing was going to work, and he's moving the thing in and out and all this. And then he made a large one from that. Did you start with a scale model?
No.
Yeah. No. You went with the cardboard.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that kind of how that you normally would when you're creating new illusions?
Pretty much. Later on, it became a little more sophisticated. It was masonite and framework, and then cutting it and recutting it and making it smaller or larger,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
So we got the idea that, you know, this is the size,
right?
You know, because illusion plans that have dimensions, you can't rely on them because your girl might,
right,
be different than somebody else.
So that was what I was going
to
say. Yeah,
do it on your own.
Whatever their size is, like my wife was like 5'9", 5'8", and whenever I had a zigzag built, I knew to ask to have it made for her dimensions. And so you, Jan, wouldn't fit like in one that my wife would work in.
It would have have a lot of additional steps in the inside, I think.
So you have to build it. I think a lot of guys will
absolutely
think they can just buy an illusion off the shelf, or they see something that's on eBay or Facebook, and they'll buy a generic illusion,
exactly,
and then find out, oh, the girl doesn't fit in there exactly. This thing is broken or doesn't work. No, you just bought it wrong.
And that's why a lot of the time is that things don't look good when they do
that's
things
a good point.
Like that.
That's a very good point.
And now that Jan is not working in the show, and I have some girls that are a little taller or a lot taller. And
you have to have whole new illusions.
Yeah, well, what it is when I open the drawer, the zigzag, they
bend over. That's funny.
Okay. Oh, it sort of gives away the trick, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I think, oh, she has to call, okay, yeah. It's kind of funny. Well, what was the most recent or the last one that you had come up with? What was your most...
What would it be? Futuristic thing, probably. I always liked combining two effects in one. So
an existing
one of the
method.
First things we did was the impaled, sword impaled.
Yeah.
But we combined that with the suspension on the back of the neck.
The sword suspension thing?
Yeah,
sword
suspension on the back of the neck. And then we put a sword in the middle of her back and removed the one from her neck and did the impaled.
Yeah.
So it was a build-up from one to another. And then with my Through the Eye of the Needle, it was a combination of the barrels, the Eye of the Needle.
That's a great, great trick.
And a sub-trunk.
Okay.
So there was that. I never felt that trick had a real strong climax. You know, the girl went through from one to the other,
barrel to the other,
but then you had to pull out all the bars and all
and
finally she got out. And
because people were expecting it, so it was almost anticlimactic. By the time you got all the bars taken out, well, of course she's going to be there.
So my take on it was do a sub-trunk, and we don't use barrels. They're plastic tubes, and one is clear, so you can see the girl when she's gone from one to the other, but you don't have to let her out.
Yeah.
So she's still sealed in one, and you can see her, and then you can do a sub-trunk. And
who do you confer with whenever you talk to Jan about? I mean, do you give him some advice? I mean, from an assistant standpoint, you're going to say this works or doesn't work, or maybe this needs to be deeper or shallower. Or,
well, it's a process like any other process. You start thinking one way and find, well, maybe it might work a little bit better if we tweaked this or made this a little smaller here or made it a little larger there.
I think it's got to be beneficial as a builder and a creator to get that kind of immediate feedback from someone you're going to be using.
And we've bought tricks from wonderful builders, John Gaughan and Bill Smith through the years. But, most of the effects I built myself over the years.
Yeah.
And I like doing that. I like building them.
I think of you and Andre as being two of the real creative guys.
Thank you to be put in that same class. I think he's come up with more creative things than I have. But from these wonderful builders, you get the illusion, and then she gets in it. And she says, well, I can't do this. Why not? Well, it needs a handle over here. Johnny Gunn didn't know that, but yeah. The girls, once they're in there, they know that. Yeah. A handle would really make it so much easier for them to do.
Or the latches are not, they're either too strong and you can't unlatch them, which more than likely is not the case, mm-hmm. but they're not strong enough and they don't grasp.
Oh, okay.
And if you're doing a lot of movement for whatever reason, it's not too good when the prop falls open when it's not supposed to.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of, you know, changing and tweaking. And
well, another thing would be for working over and over, because I would think that you'd the number of shows that you'd be doing, that after a while that some of these things are going to break down, or that you don't use the right kind of hardware, that it's only going to be six shows and it's falling apart, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's actually, I have to hand it to the women. I'm admitting it now, dear. And that is, the illusion builder, the designer, says, oh, the girl's going to be in this position in this box. But you know what? When you get the box and the girl actually gets in it, she's liable to say, oh, it's so much easier if I twist over on my side. Look, I only take up this much space if I fold this way, you know?
Yeah.
And they come up with the stuff. And so now when I'm training a new girl for the show, I say, okay, well, Jan did it this way. Get in there and see what's most comfortable for you and how fast you can get from A to B.
Some
and
if you can do it flexible. In
a different position. You know, I'm serious. A couple of things. I intended the girls to be laying on their back in a table, right?
Yeah.
And for some of the girls, they could get out of there much quicker if they were laying flat on their stomach.
As opposed to the back.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, that was an eye-opener for me, you know, not what I envisioned.
Yeah.
And also, not only height difference in girls, but some girls' legs are longer, mm-hmm. or their torso is longer, or
hips
their
are wider, or whatever.
Whatever, and that all is a very integral part of working in illusion and finding out.
In the case of a zigzag, if the girl has large boobs,
yeah.
you have to
make accommodations.
Get out of the way fast.
On the other hand, I have seen some girls who are very, very thin, and I think, okay, they can fit inside of a microphone stand, it seems like, and hide, you know, turn sideways. And so that, I would think, they wouldn't fool much of anybody, unless they have some sort of billowing costume on, which I think is part of why that magicians use doves and rabbits, because they look large whenever they come out of their confines, but, you know, they are compressed, you know, to begin with.
Right.
So I think if you had a thin girl, just kind of with a billowy dress.
All compressed.
Yeah. They could fit in those tighter spots, you know, at least over there. Now, you've worked on a lot of different shows. I mean, going back, like, I guess, Mike Douglas and some of these other talk shows. And
yeah, they're all dead now. That's the only trouble. You should read my biography of all the famous stars I worked with, and you read it and say, well, my God, they're all dead.
You're still doing well, though. You look healthy and well.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, what is your autobiography? What is the book? You got a book that's out?
No,
working
I don't.
On one?
I am going to work on one, and it's going to be a combination of some of the original illusions I came up with, and funny stories, and a biography.
Right. You know, Walter Blaney's been working on his for a long time, and
I know.
And whenever we always go to lunch, he's always carrying the note index cards in his pocket, and he'll say, that's a good story, Scott. I forgot about that, and he'll start to write it down, and he's going to go in the book. Well, come on, Walter, write the book. I mean, I know a book is a labor of love, but goodness sake.
Well, I have other priorities. You know, that's
what
the
are
trouble.
You doing? What are you doing then right now?
Right now?
Yeah, aside from talking with me. What, what kind of priorities have you got?
Well, I'm getting ready to go to New Zealand for another month's tour.
Okay.
But that's not until the fall. We moved our workshop and warehouse.
Oh, that's got
to
be a real
house. I put the workshop in the garage, and we put a building in the back to store the illusions, because I was paying too much a month.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not working as much as I did anymore. So what I'm spending a lot of time on right now is getting my working woodshop equipment together in the garage, basically.
Well, I'm surprised about that, because I would think that you'd be working a lot more, because there are so few illusionists anymore who are out there, you know, working. There are a few, but most everybody doing a big show now is filling it up doing mentalism or something.
There are fewer jobs than there were.
Well, why do you think that is? Seriously, you have any idea?
A lot of the guys, by the way, are on ships, you know, and they're on ships for 10 months out of the year with the big illusion
You've
show.
Done ships?
I don't want. I did the, yes, but I don't want to go out for 10 months, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's not open to me. And then some of the guys are, you know, in Las Vegas or have their own theater. Well, I never went that route.
But it's still just a handful of guys. I mean, when you get down to it, when you consider the thousands of magicians worldwide and you narrow that down to those who are illusionists, it's a small handful of you guys, you know?
Probably, yeah. You're probably right.
That's why I think you would be in demand. I mean, I understand then, Jan, that there are fewer venues or less opportunity, but I think that even so, that there are fewer illusionists. People are... It's expensive, for one thing, as you know, to ship the darn things and have the train the assistants and have the dance and the music and all the kind of stuff that goes with it. So it's going to be difficult.
Unfortunately, I don't think there are necessarily fewer illusionists. If anything, I think there are more. It's just there are more illusionists that are not as educated in being... being able to fluctuate their act from one type of venue to another and being versatile enough, which you have to do, but doing illusions makes it a little bit harder. So those that can vary from one venue to another change their show up, work in the round if they need to, work on top of a truck like Chuck used to do in the early years, have the opportunity of working more than some of the others.
I was surprised whenever I first heard that Marvin Roy was doing close-up at a restaurant. I thought, well, he's an illusionist. I consider him as an illusionist working around. And then this was many, many years ago, and I heard that, and I thought,
he loves magic.
Yes, yeah.
He loves magic.
Of all forms.
And he can't do his act anymore. This is a wonderful outlet for him to keep busy. And that's why, you know, I'm still working and anybody else, you know.
Well, going back again to some of the television shows that you know, you had done. I mentioned Mike Douglas and trying to think of some of the other guys, way back when. Can you give me some story that will be like in your autobiography? I mean, is there a good one, a good story or two about working with somebody that might have been an outstandingly good or bad situation that comes
to
mind?
Actually, you know, in most of those shows, you don't get a chance to talk one-on-one with the Steve Allens and the Carsons and whatever, because they're so busy and preoccupied before, and afterwards they've got another set of priorities.
Yeah.
And so unless they're already personal friends, chances are you probably, or unless you can call back two or three times or something like that. I never really got to know any of the personalities that we worked with.
Well, did you have any problem whenever you were loading in or out or something that went wrong? And I assume some of those were live shows.
There are always problems. We just don't happen to talk about
them. See, I already mentioned it to somebody else today, and that is with all the hundreds of shows we've all done, what you remember are all the ones where things went wrong. You don't want to talk about those.
Well, you want to remember that, so you don't do it again.
You know, or you even got the standing ovation. Probably 10 years later, you forgot all about that, but you sure remember when you sawed the girl in half and she was bleeding or something. You know what I mean?
A while back, there was a book that was written that had to do with magicians' horror stories or something about that, where things have gone wrong. And when this person was going to put the book together, I thought, I don't know that they're really, the magicians will really share the real story. They'll tell you something that kind of happened. They'll be, you know, maybe comical, but as far as something that was really bad, they're not going to tell you because it makes them look bad. That's like, okay, I should have done this, you know.
Also, it's not only making them look bad, which in some cases shouldn't reflect on them at all, because some of the things are just, you know, they happen and you can't change it. But it's also, where was I going? If it's something available to the general public, you don't want to give out your secrets.
Oh, well, that's true, too.
You can't say, when I was, you know, going to be produced in a dollhouse and the latches broke open and the door fell open before I was ready and they could see me climbing out of the trap door.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to tell that to the lay public. They may imagine it in their minds.
But they don't want to get confirmation of that.
They don't want to get confirmation, and you don't really want to give confirmation. When I was being interviewed for Women in Boxes, I was really specific, although they wanted to not let us know what the questions were going to be. I said, you have got to let me know some of them, because if this is going to be for general viewing, I want to make sure what I'm saying is not going to give anything away.
Right.
So if you're going to ask me about a specific instance, I want to carefully word it. I don't want to take up camera time doing that.
Yeah, right, right. No, makes perfect sense. That's good. Good answer.
So a couple of real short, interesting quips here on personalities. I had a chance to work with Orson Welles, as a number of magicians had.
Uncle Orson.
Basically, he rented the Miss May Girl from me, and I taught him to use it and all that, and for the Jackie Gleason show. And he said, Chuck, these are different colored boxes. He said, nobody's going to remember the order. And I said, well, you know, I didn't expect them to. He says, well, we have to put numbers on the boxes. 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah,
and he said, once you mix up the boxes, look, I'll switch the numbers. And that's how that all came about.
That's funny.
From Orson.
Yeah.
Then
he was a creative guy. Gosh.
Fast forward to about 10, 12 years ago, we did a number of shows out at Michael Jackson's ranch. But the first time we went out there, it was an afternoon show. He had his own movie theater and a fairly good-sized stage. And we were to do like a 2 o'clock show. And we got there at like 11:30 to load in. And at about 11:45, his secretary called backstage and said, well, he's really excited. He wants to see the show. How soon can you be ready? And I said, well, 2 o'clock was a good time. Oh, but he can't wait. No, we got to get the show on earlier. You know, he's so excited about doing this. So anyway, we get the show on, however, maybe a half hour earlier. And curtain opens, and it was, the audience was 4 people. It was Michael Jackson, 2 kids, and 1 adult. And that was it.
Okay. Well,
and one of them had the money. One of them is Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he came up afterwards. He really enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
You know, he's so quiet and doesn't talk to people really. Except if it's all
right.
But they called us back, and he wanted me back for 4 or 5 times in a couple of years. Yeah.
And you
so
did something different every time, then, I guess.
That was fun, yeah. And then she pulled one. I was touring in Australia, and we had a couple of days off in Brisbane, and Michael Jackson was taking, that was the last tour that he did, really did, because you know what happened. So this is about 10 years ago, and we wanted to go see the show, and the dancers I had with me knew a couple of the dancers that Michael had in the show. So they said, oh, well, we can get in, we can get tickets. Well, they couldn't. And so I mentioned it to Jan, and Jan said, well, I'll just call Norma and see if they can arrange something. So after the phone call, I said to my 2 girls,
guess what? Jan made a phone call. We're going to be part of the entourage. We get in a bus with the press for Michael Jackson's show, and we've got 3 front row seats with the press.
With the press, yeah.
I wasn't there. I was back in
so
LA.
So she pulled off her magic.
Very good job.
It was fun. It was very impressive. But
how cool is that?
Yeah,
really. Well, I'll tell you what, just to wrap up over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And so let me ask you guys, each of you, what's important in your life? What is it that's your philosophy? What do you live by? What's your magic word or phrase? What's, you know?
Wow, that's too deep for me.
Yeah, something that people can live by. I mean, you know, whenever you get up in the morning and you think, okay, this, I'm doing it for this. This is what's important. I love or whatever.
Yeah, I think we try to live for the moment, really.
Good.
You know, I mean, and try to swing with the punches. What happens, happens, and let's move on to the next thing. And,
yeah, don't let it get you down. Get up and go to the next one. Jan?
A quote from the producers, keep it gay.
What?
Yeah. No, I mean,
just gay, happy.
The old meaning.
Have fun
in your life. And like Chuck said, what happens, happens. Get past it, move on. And, you know, take the joy that you have inside of you and let it flow to your audience.
And they can detect that. They'll know that.
Yes.
That
absolutely.
Breaks the fourth wall when you do that.
Yes.
That's been a great time chatting with you guys. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Chuck and Jan Jones for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty out.
Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas with your neon flashing.
Scott Wells from themagicwordpodcast.com, and I've been trying to get hold of this man since the first day and finally found him, Mr. Stan Allen. Hello, Stan.
Hello.
Great to talk to you finally over here. So how are things going from your perspective so far? I mean, here we are into near the end of day two.
We are, and this is an unusual day for us because we have 3 shows running tonight, all on the same floor, which means all 1,600 registrants could be on the same floor, and we don't normally do that. So we put a lot of crowd control into place, and we think we have it under control, but you know what? We won't find out for a few more hours.
Until after that's over.
Right.
I said this is day two. Actually, this is officially day 3.
It is.
When you figure Sunday as being the first day over there.
Tuesday night.
Yeah, Tuesday evening. And so the shows have been going fantastic. They've had good variety. Several standing ovations for the shows that they've had. The breakout sessions have been outstanding. I think everyone has been really at a higher level, and they have a good variety of different people who are talking about, like, the close-up, Mike Caveney, you know, talking about the classic correspondence. And again, it is like, of course, the Magic Magazine coming alive, and everything's working
well,
I think.
And this year it is not as much about the magazine coming alive. Certainly we have classic correspondence, and we have Loving Mentalism. And
Walkabout with
Simon Cornell. We do have about 4 or 5 of our columnists represented here. Mark Kornhauser will be host tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, but we've taken the whole convention this year into its own element, and that is the adventure. Mm-hmm. And the concept being that we want all of these people here to try new things, to explore new things, go to the focus session you never thought you would want to go to. If you're a mentalist, maybe you go to the Monsters, Children Are Monsters type thing. You know, just to break away from it and try it and see. And that's why we asked David Copperfield to come and talk about creative process and how does he actually create something like flying, which he talked about, which was great.
And how he fights failure.
Exactly, how he fights failure and how... Michael Carbonaro talked about stuff. Wayne Houchin talked about that. David Diebel talked about, here's a guy that was a fantastic juggler, hit his head, and his right arm doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
And how did he overcome that? And what did he learn from that?
Mm-hmm.
So we're not just stuck on magicians.
It's life lessons.
Exactly, and magicians. Mm-hmm. Like we had Ed Kessel today. I thought he was fantastic. Music and how to apply music to your act and how to write music for your act. And he's a guy, he wrote our overture.
That is
fabulous. Has an overture.
It has that Indiana Jones feeling.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And what's funny is, I commissioned him to write that overture before we had finalized on the theme.
Oh.
And after the overture was written, and we were all going, well, I don't know, should be explore, should be detours, and we listened to the music and said, you know, I think it should be the adventure. Yeah.
And it just became it. So it evolved the same way through the same kind of creative processes that we're challenging our registrants, our guests here,
right.
What we're calling the creative challenge. Take the creative challenge. Let's get outside your box. Let's do
well,
it.
I like that a couple of years ago when you were talking about friends as being,
right.
how can you have anything better than friends? Well, this is good when you say curiosity is going
curiosity.
To be.
Curiosity. I mean, it's called the adventure, but it's about curiosity.
Okay. I need to go back and change my podcasting. Or if I had something on the blog, I was saying that you were saying curiosity, but it's, so it's adventure, basically.
Yeah, it's Magic Life, the adventure,
okay.
is this year. So
okay.
it's not hung on a celebration, an anniversary of the magazine.
Right,
this year.
Right.
It's all its own entity, and it also has a graphic look this year that is much more extensive than we've ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
David Starr, who designs fantastic backdrops and scenic stuff,
mm-hmm.
created a series of 5 travel documents, sort of maps, if you will.
Right.
And a little pouch that we put
them
all in.
So each day we get those.
We get those every day. And so those elements have now creeped into every aspect of the convention. So I'm very proud of our creative look this year. We're out of the box.
And another interesting thing that you're doing, it's out of the box, is that instead of giving away the lecture notes you've done in the past, we've got like a code that is unique to you to go and download after the convention rather than during
the convention.
That's interesting.
For 2 reasons after the convention. First of all, we want you to engage while you're here.
Yeah.
Second of all, we couldn't get to everything. So it's not...
That's a secret.
It's going to come up as a work in progress, and we'll get pieces of it and pieces of it. And
sure.
over the next month to 2 months, there will be surprises there for our registrants. So the adventure will continue through your locked, gated vault, the vault, we call it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually expanding the experience.
And as I understand it, that for the final night, that people have put in a registration or a little ticket mm-hmm. so they can win potentially up to $100,000.
That's absolutely right. We will be drawing one name, and that person will win either $500, $1,000, $5,000, or $100,000 by simply playing a game with us.
Okay.
And it'll be the last thing of the convention.
So don't leave. If you're here and listen
leave.
To this podcast, don't
fun.
Leave early.
I wouldn't leave early. Our finally party, again, we will tear down our entire dealer's room in 3 hours, and we'll set up an entire party.
Brigadoon.
It is Brigadoon.
Yeah.
And it's the one time we can put everybody in one room.
Mm-hmm.
So we love that.
Well, 1,800 people fit in that?
Well, we have 1,600.
Okay,
we have 1,600 plus 200 to sneak in.
Okay. Where do they go? I mean, my goodness. I mean, even those who... I know that it has been sold out, and so you have been... selling like dealer pass only, I guess. Is that right?
No, not even that.
Not even, okay.
We have some day passes on the day of the convention. That's it.
Okay.
And I think there's only 20 of those a day. And it's only because we promised them, we said we would do that. So we had to set 20 aside to do that every day. It's not the best system. We'll do it better next time.
Yeah.
But,
so it sounds like it will be a next time.
Oh, I'm pretty sure there'll be a next time.
Yeah. Now, this started off doing every 3 years, and then it kind of went to every 2 years. I mean, first was an anniversary party, and then, okay, well, I said never do it again because... calling in favors and all this. So now, this is going to be like every other year. But this was originally scheduled for 16, but then you changed and came back to 15. Is that right?
Exactly. I did stand on stage and say the next Magic Live would be in 2016, and I think in our office there's a picture of me doing that with the word liar underneath it.
And it was something about 360, too, that was going to be
rolled out.
There was,
and let me tell you what happened on that. 360 was to be a broadcast, an internet broadcast that people could sign up for.
Kind of like EMC.
Kind of like AMC, but with a big studio, with a studio audience of 300 or 400 people.
Mm-hmm.
And after our last convention, the success of Friends pointed out to me that we don't need another internet experience. We need more personal experiences.
Interactive, personal,
where you can engage with the people.
Yeah.
I have people here that say, oh my God, it's a fantastic convention. Oh really? What did you like? Oh well, I didn't go to anything. I just saw 25 of my favorite people in the world, and we hung out for 4 days. We went to the dealer's room. I saw one show. That's it. So it's that interaction, that engagement, that it was. It just knocked me over the response to Friends last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, this is not going to become an internet. This is going to stay old school.
Yeah.
Come here. The magazine's old school. Pick up a printed copy of a magazine. And
but the iPad edition looks super, and there are a lot of extra features
like it.
They get.
Right, but we're still kind of an old school thing, and Magic Live is an old school type of an event.
Speaking of old school, though, I mean, there are a lot of young people here. When conventions seem to be, quote, dying, I guess, and literally that a lot of us as we're getting older, and so as people are not attending conventions from the older generation, there are not a lot of young people who are replacing us as we roll out.
However, this seems to have just the most, I would say, just engaging. I'd say the median age is probably 40.
Maybe. I really couldn't address that. I don't know ages. We don't keep figures.
I'm just looking at faces, just guessing.
I'm guessing this, that it's the same reason we're here. Hmm. If you look around, suddenly you see the Justin Flams, Justin Willman, mm-hmm. Michael Carbonaro, Blake Voigt, and other this young group of people, mm-hmm. and they're here. Why? Same reason we are. They're all friends.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they say, hey, all these guys are over there, well, then I want to be there.
Exactly.
And that's why we all went to conventions in the first place.
Yeah.
So we just have to give them something that they want to be at. It's cool, mm-hmm. and it's fun, and it's different. And that's the game. They, you know, a great dealer's room. I think we have a terrific dealer's room.
You do.
And we work really hard with the right mix and the right look of it and the right, I mean, even the way it's laid out. It's laid out in a sort of an 8-figure 8 so that people are constantly getting everywhere they want to go.
It's not an M. It's actually an 8.
It's an 8. Okay. Later we looked at it and said, oh, it's an M. Okay.
Let's go with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We meant to do that. But the whole idea is that you're running into people and you can get anywhere easily and quickly. And that's mm-hmm. a flow thing that I learned from a cruise ship that had one big lounge in the middle of the ship and you just ran into everybody. It was a fun ship to mm-hmm. be on. Mm-hmm. Our dealer's room is, I think, a great dealer's room because of our dealers, because of our staff, the way they put it together.
And the one-of-a-kind kind of a thing that you don't have like two book dealers or two small
We're very careful
guys.
About yeah. that. Mm-hmm. We only have, I think we have 48 fantastic vendors, mm-hmm. 4850 vendors, and for a convention of 1600, that's a little small for vendors.
Yeah.
But
obviously, looking at Sunday night, remember that there were 6 deep at each of the. Everybody was happy. All the dealers
Sunday
happy.
Night is a zoo. Yeah. The rest of the week you can get in there pretty
easily. Now I started buying some stuff today because I now I can see stuff. I couldn't on Sunday, so I couldn't.
So I don't think the desire for magicians to be a community mm-hmm. has changed anyway. That desire is still there. The vehicle, in some sense, of how they stay in touch, they're in instant touch constantly, but they still like to get together. They don't get together necessarily at a magic club meeting, per mm-hmm. se, mm-hmm. but they'll get together at a house and play a game or they'll do something. And I came out of a group like that just hung out, went to the movies together, did things together. And so, you know, can you get them to come to a convention? Yeah, I think you can if you put the right people around.
Yeah, that makes sense. So that's kind of what you've done with the lounge over here. That is the, or what was that? It was this lounge. Oh, right here. This
lounge. Lounge down here,
and that's open. Kind of.
That's open all night.
Yeah, it's kind of a hangout place.
It's just a place to hang. Mm-hmm. That's it. And so we're trying to do those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Give people places to do things.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Tonight's the breaking point. Tonight tells whether we have too many people or not.
When you try to get 1,600 people
you know
up
what?
Here.
Yeah. I still laugh a little bit because I remember one year on one of the forums, somebody was complaining that Stan's too greedy. He should stop registrations at a certain point. And you say, well, okay. You know. So then I went and looked up that guy.
Yeah.
And I wanted to write. I never did. I wanted to write on that. You do realize if I had stopped where you said to stop,
you wouldn't have been here.
You wouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you tell me.
Yeah.
No. What you do is you find ways to deal with that crowd of people.
Sure.
And we found some things that are very important. You start everything and stop everything at the same time. Whether you're downstairs or upstairs, you can get with your friends very quickly.
Sure.
We stopped ticketing certain events to make it easier to get into. Mm-hmm. You know, just like tonight, the way we're going to run crowd control tonight and the amount of people we have running crowd control, mm-hmm. you know, to. I think people are okay waiting for something if it's an organized line and if they feel they're being treated fairly. Mm-hmm. If somebody's getting ahead of them, oh, all bets are off now. Now I'm annoyed, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But if it's fair and it's, yes, it's a wait, you know. But the fact is that as a convention producer, if I can get 1,600 people here, then I have a budget mm-hmm. to do things.
Yeah.
I mean, our audiovisual budget is probably more than a lot of conventions. A lot of conventions. Our audiovisual budget breaks 6 figures. Mm-hmm. So, but look at—we have staging everywhere, video everywhere, pipe and drape everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you just say, my belief is that if you do something really great, as best as you possibly can, people will want to support it and they'll want to take part in it. And I find that's true. Have you been to the close-up show yet?
You're talking about the
documentary.
The documentary with Michael Weber
mm-hmm.
that was outstanding.
Okay.
And when Jared Koff was Vernon.
Yeah, you can't put this up now until after the night.
It won't go up until in the morning.
Okay, but the fact is, look at that group of people.
Yeah.
How do you get Johnny Thompson, David Benn, Julianne, Michael Weber, Eric Mead, Jared Koff, Paul Vigo?
Michael Weber, yeah.
These guys, you know, they wanted to be part of a project, that something that they feel was going to be good, mm-hmm. and they want to take part in it.
Right.
So the fact is, we hang this entire convention on the concept that if we try to do something better than it's ever been done,
yeah.
people will help us. We, mm-hmm. if we do it crappy, yeah, you know what? People will help you there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's our whole philosophy.
And that's great. Well, I think I heard that in the movie once. Build it, and they will come.
They'll come, I guess. Yeah. It comes off Disney. Disney said, regarding keeping the park clean, they said if we keep the park spotless, then our guests will help us do that. If we let the park get dirty, our guests will also help us do that.
Yeah.
So here, a standard, people want to do it. Everybody. People come to me and say, okay, I know you wouldn't take my regular talk, but here, I'm going to do a special talk for you because they know that's our demand.
Several of those presenters said that. I heard Mike Cavey say that. I heard Joel Bauer say that. Some of these other guys are all saying, I'm doing this only for Stan, and I promise I was going to do this or that. And they kind of give it their all.
Right.
It's great.
And that's the thing. We actually have more people contact us mm-hmm. that want to do something than we could possibly ever use, and we only use probably a third of them. Because mm-hmm. it's not that they're not good.
Of course.
But we're trying to build a whole puzzle, and this piece doesn't quite fit, and this piece doesn't quite fit.
Yeah, that all makes sense. So well, listen, you promised me 40 seconds, but you gave me a lot more than
there
that.
You
Thank
go.
You very much
you
for your time over there. This has been fantastic.
All right.
And so good luck with the rest of this. And it is coasting. I know you're not coasting, but for the rest of us, we're looking forward to it. It's the curiosity.
Good deal.
So
okay. Take the challenge.
We are. I'm enjoying the adventure. That was Stan Allen for the Magic Podcast. This is Scotty Young.
Fever, Las Vegas, turning day into nighttime, turning night into daytime. If you see it once, you'll never be the same again.
Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I've got Bill Seagraves and Marlene with me here from Australia.
New Zealand.
New Zealand. Sorry, I say that wrong, you Kiwis. Okay. I was just talking.
Celtic Kiwis.
Yes, right, by way of Scotland.
Yes.
I was talking with Chuck Jones just a little bit. He said he's going to be heading over, I think, later for
New
Zealand.
Yes, we're always going and
concert.
See him.
Yeah.
We look forward to him.
Yep.
He comes to Taupo every year, uh-huh. and we go and watch his show. It's brilliant.
I didn't realize he was that much of a regular performer over there. So
every year he comes. He visits Australia and New Zealand.
Well, it's your summer, I guess, over there, so that's why he'll be coming over.
Well, it's winter there at the moment.
Right now, but I mean, he's going to be coming over
November.
Yeah.
November. He always comes in November, and he tours Australia, then he comes over to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And he's got some schedule that he has to attend. And
right.
They put on a brilliant show, and he brings a lot of good artists as well.
Great to hear. So tell me about, you were just starting to talk about this convention. This isn't your first Magic Live, though.
It is the first one. Magic Live will be
in
many conventions.
I know that. I see it.
But this has been awesome. It's just
What's made it over the top?
Completely different.
Yeah.
Surprises. You just don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
And they're all good surprises.
Yeah, Bill?
Yeah, I would say that. We didn't know what to expect.
Yeah. You just heard it was good.
We just heard it was good.
Yeah.
We thought, well, give us a try, and it's been amazing.
What is it that has stood out for you? I mean, probably a lot of stuff, but what is it comes to mind immediately?
Well, one show we saw today was The Stars of Magic.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that awesome?
That was just brought a tear to my eye.
It did when I heard Vernon coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that guy, the voice, it was
absolutely spot on.
Yeah, the partner was brilliant.
Yeah.
I think there was a few moist eyes in the audience at that point.
Right.
And it was that type of surprises. You know, the show, like, Demir. You know, who expected him to walk on?
Yeah, who expected Di Vernon to show up in Magic Live?
Yeah,
this is Magic Live, not Magic Dead.
I hope I'm alive to come to another one.
Bill Seagraves live. Here we go. So, what about the stage shows? You like the morning, the evening show?
Yes.
And then
the audience are all with it. You know, when you see these artists coming on, Charlie Fry, who's coming to New Zealand and is performing in Wellington in September.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what a juggler. Mm-hmm. The guy that was, I can't remember his name, that was the
David Beeble?
Yes.
Yeah, the compere for today?
Yes. Amazing. Absolutely. You know, I can't. There's too many adjectives I could use. But we've just
had a lot of comedy in it as well.
Yes.
Everybody's
Britain was great.
Oh, What a night!
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen Noel before, but I can assure you that was how he handled those people up on the stage.
Those children
was just amazing. So I was, he did England in the magic circle very proud.
He did. Absolutely, indeed. Well, yeah, we don't know what's going to be coming. We still have another, gosh, today Tuesday?
Yeah.
So just one more day left.
One more day.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Well, we'll be sorry to leave. In fact, we were hoping to go to the castle before we left.
Sure.
But we can't get into a hotel because all the people from here are obviously going to LA.
Oh, I see, of course, yeah.
The hotel's fully booked.
Because this is over midweek, and so they're going straight to there.
Yes.
That makes sense. Now, you're talking about, you mean like the Magic Hotel, which is next door to that?
Yes.
Well, then there's the Highland Gardens, which is just, assume that's booked also?
Well, and we'll try it for the following week.
Okay.
And that caused a problem because we could go to one hotel, I think it was a Highland, for one night, and then go back to the
Magic Hotel. It'd be kind of a hassle to switch around.
Yeah, so we're still, that's up in the air, so we're still a couple of weeks.
So what are you going to be doing in the meantime then, between now
and... Well, we'll do a bit of touring.
We're going back to San Francisco with our friends, and then we mentioned going to San Jose.
Yeah, beautiful down there.
Never been there.
Oh, you'll
enjoy
it.
All the times we've been in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing.
And if you get a chance to go to Carmel, it's beautiful over there.
We went the last time.
Did you? Okay.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, we had a good time down there. We stayed down there for 3 days, I think, to stay in Carmel.
I could go to the wine region. I can go over to Sonoma Valley or Napa.
Yeah, well, we've been here many times.
Yeah, I know.
Enjoyed it. And we've been to Napa, and we've got friends that we make contact.
Sure.
And we had other friends in Denver.
Denver,
we just found out that we're in the States, and they're saying, why aren't you coming to visit us?
Well, now, this is the 7th Magic Live, so what's taking you so long to get to this one?
I really don't know.
I think it makes you wonder why. We went to the IBM, which was July.
Yeah.
And we couldn't come back again.
Okay.
That's correct. This time we didn't go to Jacksonville.
Right. I didn't see you there.
No.
I was at FISM, and then I went from FISM straight
to
Jacksonville.
Yeah, I saw that. Saw the reports.
Yeah.
No, you did. You did a lot of work.
It was. Well, thanks for recognizing that.
But I'm sure people do. You know, it's like people like you and Alan Watson in New Zealand, you know, puts out these reports and everything that's happening.
I love Alan. Does a great job.
Yeah, he does. He's good.
And he got the Queen's Award or something.
Yes.
Recently.
He's photographed in the front of the Magic Circular this month.
I saw that. Yeah.
He's done very well.
Fabulous.
He puts in a lot of work.
Yeah.
There's no two doubts about that.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, to start to wrap up, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so let me ask you what your magic word is. What is important to you? What is your philosophy? It could be a phrase, a sentence. What?
Smile.
Smile. Yeah.
Makes people wonder what you're up to if you smile.
That's right. That's right. If you walk on with a happy, smiling face, that audience will smile as well.
Yeah. You break that fourth wall, you know?
Yeah.
All the time. Well, great. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure speaking to you,
Scott. Thank you very much. Bill Seagraves, thank you guys very much. And for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out.
Viva Las Vegas!